Okay, well, here we are back again. Another episode of the Murder Gymnastics, a wrestling podcast. My name is Carl, also known as Mr. Meanie, and with me, as always, is that chump over there. That guy with the face. Look at that face over there. Yeah, my buddy Paul.
The biggest chump, he may as well be a champ. Heyo!
Is it, you're a chimp? That's all the words that start with CH. We're done. Okay, podcast is over. All right, we got to go. See ya.
I've been called worse, so. I do believe there is a Spanish word, chuche, have also been called. So.
Oh, I don't know what that means, but it sounds rude.
It's not the most flattering, but, you know, sometimes I live up to it.
Always. You always live up to it.
You're not wrong.
Well, how's it going, man?
It's going good. Going good. Adjusting to what I call the alien abduction time change that we do in this part of the world, where suddenly over a weekend to save daylight, they rob you of an hour. I'm like, yeah, that's great. Can we just not leave the clocks alone, please?
I hate daylight savings time. It's the worst. Yeah. I feel like shit the whole week afterwards. I can't stand it, but whatever. Mm-hmm. Life moves on. Life moves on. I'm still thinking about the Oscars. You watched the Oscars on the weekend, right? That was a pretty good show.
Yes, I did.
That was a pretty good show. I watched lots of those movies this year. Couldn't help but notice the Iron Claw wasn't included in any categories. Just to tie this into wrestling, since this is a wrestling podcast.
Is it? I still think
it sometimes. Not always. Not always.
And I can't wait to see it, but yeah, I'm surprised it wasn't nominated for anything.
I thought it would get a bone somewhere, but and that's like, I don't know when that movie's coming.
Something.
Yeah. When's it ever coming to streaming? Like I don't get streaming services anymore. I get them. I don't understand. Like it seems to take forever. During the pandemic, we were getting stuff just handed to us. It was like in the theaters and then here you go. And now it's like, I never even see anything online saying, oh, here's when this movie's coming out. It's like, they just make us wait. Bullshit.
Yeah. Well, and that seems to be the theme of it, in that like a lot of this stuff you just can't get either yet or who knows when. Like we've discussed off pod that both of us are really looking forward to Godzilla Minus One. Who knows when the hell we're going to get that.
It's not even like on DVD in Japan until May or something. So yeah, I have no idea when we're going to see that. It made lots of money. I'm so happy for Godzilla. That's fantastic. But I just want to watch it. But anyway, I digress. The Oscars had a bunch of wrestling alumni, I noticed. I saw The Rock. I saw Bad Bunny. Saw a lot of John Cena. So
for a guy whose moniker is you can't see me, we saw almost all of them.
That guy, he's a treasure, that guy. Because do you know the side story behind why he did that? So he was presenting the award for best costume. So, and he was naked, emphasizing how important costume design is. Also, the costume design union is still trying to get their contract, from what I heard. Oh. So he was actually coming out, making a statement about how important costumes are by being fucking naked on the stage. I'm like, this guy is just a special human. I love John Cena. He's just a special guy, that guy.
Wow. Yeah. Well, and you know what? He seems to be filling that void of what The Rock used to be when he first was breaking into movies, where he was this big physical guy that didn't take himself too seriously, right? Like he just had fun. And I think Cena's almost filling that early Rock void where he's just having a lot of fun and taking what opportunities he has. So
all right. I guess we've talked enough about The Rock. We've talked enough about The Rock.
It doesn't matter.
There's so much good wrestling to talk about. We don't have to talk about The Rock, although that'll lead right into talking about The Rock, the wrestling guy, because now the character that I really like from The Rock is back where he belongs, which is being a heel in WWE, and that's going smashingly well. Suddenly, Raw and SmackDown are just, well, you know, I say suddenly. It's been a consistent product for the last like year and a half with this bloodline, and here they are with The Rock coming on just being a jackass every week now, and it just works. Last week they had Seth in the ring with Cody, with The Rock, with Roman, and they're all just dishing it to each other, and that was must-see TV. It was so enjoyable to watch. All four guys very confident in what they do, didn't need scripts. You could tell they had kind of an idea what they wanted to do, let the crowd react and just go after each other. It was so much fun. And now we're like 4 weeks from Mania now. three and a half. Wow. Yeah. Oh, wait, no, it's 3 weeks from Saturday. Holy shit. Romania is almost here. I'm so excited. So excited.
And it's on my calendar. I'm actually going to be watching Mania again, which has me pumped.
Yeah. They announced some of the Hall of Fame inductees, as they always do. Lots of, like, they do legends. Like, I saw Muhammad Ali's name and a bunch of other stuff. And that's fine. But the one that's everyone's talking about is Paul Heyman finally getting inducted. And they're just, you know, debating who's going to be his, you know, inductee. Like, is that what they say? The person that welcomes him in, that does the speech. And yeah. They haven't.
Is he going to introduce himself? Like, he's a good talker.
Exactly. No, they've been like, do they go ECW? Do you go WCW? Do you go WWE? Like, you know, CM Punk is a name because he's been with him. Of course, Brock Lesnar, but now, you know, maybe not now. You know, Roman Reigns could do it, but then he'd have to do it in character because with everything being so hot, I can't see stepping out of character to do, like, maybe. No, I can't see them doing that right now. So, like, Tommy Dreamer's the guy I think should do it personally. But if I had to guess, it's probably going to be Punk just because they've been trying to get him over so much. And then, you know, he gets hurt and all that momentum is killed. And Drew McIntyre is just slaying CM Punk every week right now. Like, it is, you would laugh your head off. Like, Drew is just being ruthless. He comes out and like half his promo is just beating up on CM Punk, who's not even there. It's really funny. So, yeah, and then the crowd tries to get at Drew by chanting CM Punk, and that doesn't work because Drew's on fire right now. I don't know if Drew's ever been better than he is right now. Just, he hasn't had this character to play before, this angry, I'm not quite babyface, not quite heel, and he's just, it seems like he found his wheelhouse. Some wrestlers, it takes time, right, to figure out the exact character that is your comfort zone, and boy, does he seem comfortable with this smirk on his face and just being an unpredictable, he's very Stone Cold. Like, when Stone Cold was like, what is he? You know, sometimes he was definite babyface, sometimes he was definite heel, but sometimes Stone Cold was like, I don't really know what's going on here. And that's where Drew is right now. It's great for viewers. I'm loving it every week. Yeah. So with Road to WrestleMania, we'll be talking about that more and more. We have the two matches that we're going to break down tonight later on as our main event. We'll get to that shortly, but we're still talking some current wrestling. So there was lots of TNA, so much TNA, two pay-per-views. Like, good Lord.
I know, it's insane. I forgot there was one coming until I was watching last Thursday's Impact and they were saying tomorrow on Revolution. I'm like, oh shit.
Yeah. So like No Surrender was, God, that was 2 weeks ago now. That was a decent pay-per-view. And then Resistance. No.
No.
What was the one? What was Sacrifice. The new one? Sacrifice, that was the one. I actually thought Sacrifice was a better overall show, but No Surrender was still a good pay-per-view. I still enjoyed it, but I can't remember. I think not many matches are jumping out. I know Jordan Grace's win was really good. I enjoyed that.
There was the tiebreaker for the tag team belts was in there. That was a really good match.
That was a good match. Oh, Ali, of course, making his big debut. So with Mustafa Ali, I still think the gimmick is weird, but boy, is he good in the ring, eh? Like, the crowd was, like, he's over so fast. He just walks out, and the crowd was already into him. And then as that match went, they got louder and louder. And I was like, wow, the crowd is completely on board with him right now. And he does that 450 at the end. Like, he looked fresh. I was impressed. I was a fan of his in WWE, but yeah, he looks ready to impress in TNA.
Yeah, he looked really good. I hadn't seen him before. And because we're still kind of learning who's who in the TNA world, I wasn't sure if Chris Sabin, the champion going into the match, if he was a crowd favorite or not. I couldn't really tell because
it was mixed, wasn't it?
Yeah, really, really mixed. And he has kind of a weird vibe that I'm still trying to figure out. So yeah, I was pulling for Mustafa Ali for sure, just because, yeah, he's very smooth. He brings kind of an energy and character that I wasn't seeing in Sabin. Yeah, he's smooth, and I'm really, really looking forward to seeing more. He brings something different to the table that we're not really seeing anywhere else in TNA. So
yeah, agreed. And that beautiful head of hair. Let's be honest.
Yeah,
he's got the nicest
something hair. To aspire
for
to.
Someone that's got no hair, that he's got a beautiful head of hair. It's fantastic.
And then that PCO versus Khan. I gotta say, Khan isn't really impressing me that much. He's just kind of a big meathead kind of idiot.
I'm the same. Like PCO is kind of a big lumbering guy, but at least he has this character, this supernatural thing that he does. Khan's just Khan Smash, right? So
he's beating up the timekeeper before the match. I'm like, so you're just a idiot that has to hit things? Okay.
I know.
And then he did it again in the most recent pay-per-view too, where it's like, oh, he's attacking the timekeeper again. I'm like, is that really something that you want to think, let viewers think is okay?
We
that
can
they
cross
can just
promote
attack anybody.
We can cross promote these pay-per-views because that match, those matches were so interchangeable. Even though the one that we just watched on the second pay-per-view was like weapons and stuff, it felt the same exact match. They can stop now. Like, I don't need to see a third. I thought it was going to be fun having these big guys in a feud, and it's not. It's really boring. And it also was really short. Like, neither match from either pay-per-view lasted very long. They're not memorable. Like, nothing stood out as like, definitely not rewatchable. I wouldn't watch those matches again. It was boring. It's too bad. It's a shame.
The only thing that impressed me out of those matches was the risks that PCO is willing to take, because there's dives to the outside of the ring that he takes that remind me of Darby Allin. Like, this is who Darby Allin's going to be when he grows up. And it actually funny, because there's a match from a previous WrestleMania that you see something happen where it looked like PCO landed on his head, and I'm like, oh, fuck. I'm like,
and like,
Jesus,
250
and he's not
pounds.
Young.
Yeah, and not young. I know.
I'm like,
but then he gets up and he does it again, because like, he leapt out of the ring more than once in that match. I'm like, dude, you almost killed yourself the first time. One thing I do want to say about No Surrender, the last note I have about No Surrender was the big No Surrender match, like the main event. That gimmick was terrible, because there was too many people. There's supposed to be a second, right? In boxing, they call it your second. The person in the corner with the towel. There was a second and a third and a fourth and a fifth in each corner.
Yeah.
There's too many people. And also, if you're going to have a match like that, where someone that loves you is going to throw the towel, where's the emotion on either side there? Like, it was your tag team partners with the towel that promise they won't throw it. Well, then what's the story then? It should be your loved one or someone that really, your old aging trainer, right? Think about Rocky. It should be someone that, like, every time you're getting punched, they're like crying, no, leave him, no, you know, I'm going to throw the towel in. I didn't feel that once that entire match. I'm like, don't throw the towel in. He said, don't throw it. Why are you throwing it? None of this makes any sense. It was a terrible gimmick. I hated it.
And it seemed abrupt. Like, it's the kind of finish. Okay, somebody's going to trick somebody into throwing the towel or something. At least that would have been a more interesting ending.
Yeah, it didn't. It made no sense. So, yeah, so the first pay-per-view was fine, but that ending really left kind of a sour note in my mouth. I like both wrestlers. I really like Moose a lot, actually. But it wasn't their fault. It's just that format was no good. The impact after that, I don't need to talk a bunch about it, because then we get right into the next pay-per-view. But I just remember that Macklin versus Speedball was an awesome match. That was a rewatchable match, because I really like Speedball Mike Bailey. I didn't think I was going to. I'm not much for barefoot wrestlers. That's not my thing. But something about the way he manages himself in the ring, I really enjoy the impacts and just the way he does it. I thought that was a great match. I really enjoyed it. So I had to throw a little love to that match.
Well, and I got to say, Macklin's starting to impress me a little bit more, because at first I thought he was just kind of the ex-army meathead, because he wasn't, there didn't seem to be a lot on the surface. I like him better on his own rather than having the tag-alongs that seem to be following him around.
Yeah,
I think
totally.
He's more interesting as a lone wolf, but we'll see how that goes. But yeah, and I like him in ring, though.
His match against Nemeth at Sacrifice was a really good match. I enjoyed
that. Yes, that was a hell of a way to open that pay-per-view, for sure.
Yeah, big time. Nemeth, so that's, you know, Dolph Ziggler. I've been liking him for years, but he looks like he's having a lot of fun. Sort of like the chains are off and he's free to kind of do his own thing here in TNA, and it looks like he's having a pretty good time. You can see on his face the enthusiasm. That spot where Macklin got thrown through the corner out of the ring and almost killed the timekeeper. Holy shit. Yeah. I thought someone was going to die there. Like, I don't know if he meant to miss the post by that much. He basically just shot like a rocket out of the ring. I haven't seen someone do that in a long time. Like, that was a dangerous spot. My God. So my biggest surprise out of TNA lately, and it once again at the last pay-per-view, Joe Hendry, I shouldn't like. And that and his stupid song I also shouldn't like, because that song is
and it's
stupid.
An earworm.
That song is stupid. And then after the match is done, I'm at my desk and my head's always going. There's nothing playing. And I'm like, I believe in Joe Hendry. I'm like, fuck, I'm singing the song. Like, it worked. It's somehow it worked. I'm even clapping my hands. I'm like, God damn it.
It's funny because I was thinking the same thing. The first couple of times I saw him, like, just like in the back locker room, kind of interviews and stuff, didn't really do much for me. I was like, eh, well, whatever, we'll see where this goes. But then, yeah, when he comes out and that infectious music, well, and the fact that even mid-match, he stops and he gets the crowd to, like, as he's, like, hammering his opponent, he's doing it to the time of the, like, I believe, I'm like, fuck off, this is working.
The fans liked it before I did, because they were singing that first time. I'm like, why do you guys sing into this? This is annoying. And here we are. Here we are talking about it on a podcast. So we have new tag champs, which I'm actually really excited about, because the system, those guys are I really like them a lot. Brian Myers, I'm a huge fan of. We saw him in NWA. Eddie Edwards is awesome. I'm a big fan of his. And Moose, of course, is part of that group too. But having them win the belts, I know you like ABC, but I think that was a good move to give the system, the way they market them is kind of like, you know, we're the system that runs TNA. Well, now they can be the tag team that, you know, has the gold, and they can sort of position themselves each week as, like, you know, we're in charge. And
yeah, I really like that match. Like, I'm a mark for ABC for sure. Like, I just think they bring a really fun energy, really good moveset. But so I think it's smart. And I actually think, I don't think we've seen a cross promotional faction to the degree that we're seeing Bullet Club. Because you've got Bullet Club in Japan, you've got Bullet Club Gold in AEW, and ABC are actually an extension of Bullet Club too. So you've got one faction in three promotions.
This, yeah, the Bullet Club, the way they almost have like branches with different names, like you're the American branch, and then there's the Japanese branch. Like, I think it's cool. It's a different way to kind of do this, and it allows these members to, like, sort of represent around the world, and then they can, like, move promotions too, and sort of, like, yeah, I think it's really neat. I like it a lot. Strange that the women's tag belts changed hands again. I like that. Like, I like the women's tag division in TNA. I like most of the teams I've been introduced to, but so far they've been like, it's like, this is our third champions we've had in like 2 months, and that match was like, what, 5 minutes? I was like, that was an odd. I found it very strange that it was like a 3.5 hour pay-per-view. Why did you need a 5 minute women's tag title match? It seemed weird. It seemed too quick. And all of a sudden we had new champs. I had no emotional investment in that. It just happened. Boom. I was like, oh shit, new champs. Okay. I hadn't even got used to the old champs yet.
Like, usually you have the team that lost wanting their rematch or something, but it was kind of like they won the belt and that was it. So I don't know if something happened behind the scenes that made them change abruptly, but yeah, I thought it was a little odd to change already as well.
I couldn't really figure out why that happened, but then they did it again. So I have written down the women's tag belts are hot potatoes, because it seems like that's what they're doing, right? It's strange. Yeah. I thought that was odd, and it's a shame because I kind of like that team, MK Ultra, and one of their members is my favorite name in all professional wrestling right now, Masha Slamovich. Like, come on, that name fucking rules.
I love
that's
that.
Just the best name. But anyway, we have new champs. I have nothing against Spitfire, so we'll see what they can do. It seemed a little, it didn't really fit the situation, but that's fine. The women's world title match was a banger. I really enjoyed it. Triple threats are not always my favorite, but they actually did a good job of, because it was two smaller wrestlers and a juggernaut, right? Jordynne Grace, they kept showing off her ability to do two moves at the same time. I thought that was great. That was kind of a gimmick throughout the whole match, was her picking up both or tossing both, or, you know, holding one up. She was holding the one up in like a suplex and then clothesline the other one. Like, fucking, that's so badass. Just put the Superman S on her chest, man. She's incredible. Absolutely incredible. Yeah.
Those matches always make me a little nervous because you never know how they're going to go, and not, it doesn't, there's sometimes there's just no flow to it. It's looking for spots, but no, that one seemed to really work.
And the main event was fine. It was Moose and Eric Young. It was a good match.
Young.
I didn't love that Moose had to do his finish move multiple times. I don't know why they would build it up that Eric Young is so strong that he can defy multiple finishers. That seemed like that's something that like Brock Lesnar or something you build up, or the Undertaker. But I don't think that every wrestler should be able to kick out of multiple finishers. That ending, it should have just been maybe he dodged the first one, or maybe, you know, counters the first one. But to take it full, that should have been match over, in my opinion. I don't know why.
Yeah. And with everything going on, it really, I don't know. I was not surprised at all that Frankie Kazarian came in and cost Eric Young the match
Oh,
either,
totally.
because it's just kind of been that thing that it's like, if almost a foregone conclusion. So, yeah.
Felt a little thrown in though, didn't it? Because I was like,
Yeah.
oh, Kazarian. Like, it wasn't like, oh, like it with Bloodline stuff, you're like, oh, here comes Jimmy, or here comes. I was like, who's this? And then I was like, oh, shit, Kazarian. Like, it seemed kind of like he didn't have anything at the pay-per-view. So
Yeah.
here's Kazarian.
And he just had a weird spot in one of the recent shows where he just outright attacked a ref, like
Yeah, I know.
brutalized them. And I'm like, where does this lead? Like, it's not a ref bump, or it's not like Stone Cold where he would, like, you know, abuse a ref in match or whatever. Like, he just lost, and so he absolutely brutalized the ref. And I'm like, so the only way that this story works is if he's suspended,
Right?
right?
And he wasn't suspended. So, because even the announcers were like, well, this has got to be a suspension. Well, then what's going on? I don't remember them saying he was suspended. So,
No. I also find it really odd when, like, a ref is getting brutalized like that and nobody from the back comes to help them. Like, not even fellow referees or anything.
sometimes
This
20
ref's.
people will come down to the ring to save someone from a chair, and this ref is getting literally assaulted, and no one comes down. I know.
Not one person
Not
can be
one.
bothered.
Not even a jobber, nothing. Like, nope. So,
Nope.
yeah. It's bizarre, bizarre. So, but yeah, other than that, there's so much going on in AEW that I feel if we don't talk about it soon, my brain's going to pop.
Overload.
We had Mercedes showing up last night. That's the most current thing, is Sasha Banks. Mercedes Money is in AEW. So my prediction was that she'd go to WWE. Not quite, but she's back and she looks great. She looks great. The music was great. The crowd was going crazy. And yeah, I that couldn't be a better fit, I think, right now. She sounds like she's happy to be there. And that division, like her and Toni Storm at a pay-per-view. Yeah, please sign me up. That sounds great. I'm down.
Well, and she adds a little more credibility to the division because it is coming along. But when you get, as we've said before, you got Thunder Rosa and Serena Deeb's coming back. Now you've got Monet, the CEO, I think is what they're calling her. Because you've got some other talent that's good and they're developing really well, but she comes in and she's automatically a threat. And that's exactly the shot in the arm that the division needed for sure.
Oh yeah. So going back in time, we haven't talked about Revolution yet because that was after our last recording. Great pay-per-view for AEW. That was probably one of their best overall shows that I've seen. Being Sting's show was great. It wasn't a perfect show. No, there is no such thing as a perfect show, but that was a really good show. Kingston versus Bryan was an awesome match.
Hell of a way to kick it off,
Oh
yeah.
my God, incredible. Osprey and Takeshita, like Jesus, like sure, like typical AEW, they overhyped how amazing it was. They can't control themselves while it's happening. This might be the greatest match that's ever happened, and they just calm down. Like, we know it's good, just like settle down. They overdo that. It drives me crazy.
There was one point, and I can't remember what match it was, but I laughed. And Jim Ross was like, "This crowd is all on their feet." I'm looking, I'm like, "Well, half of them are."
That guy is
I'm
right
like,
there. That guy's standing.
"Yeah."
So it was, yeah, great match. Great match for a lead up to what you were getting with Sting and Darby Allin in that finale. Awesome match, but I'm gonna have some critical things to say just because I think I love Darby Allin. He's one of my favorites, but I hated the glass spot. I absolutely hated it because for two reasons. One, gross. That's not my thing, but that's fine. It's some people's thing. That's fine. But also, that's too big a spot for Sting's final match, in my opinion. That's the thing everyone's still talking about, and not Sting's
Not
retirement
Sting.
match. So I
And
think
Sting
that,
took some fucking bumps in
oh,
that match,
some
too.
great bumps in that match. But I think that was too big a spot. I don't know if he came up with it, or if Sting came up with it, or if Tony Khan came up with it, but it, that kind of overshadowed the whole thing. And I don't think that it was appropriate to do that in his final match, because everything else about that was terrific. That entrance was amazing. I loved it. It was a great finish for Sting. He looked awesome right to the very end, took his glass spot, which his was a safer one, but even his didn't. His could have been a table and it would have been just the same effect. So that's why I don't think you need the glass. AEW loves to do these crazy weapons. Yeah. I think it's
a little
unnecessary. Yeah. It's not necessary, but so yeah, I think Sting will be really happy with that as a retirement match. You think about like other examples, like Ric Flair's most recent retirement match. Most people don't like talking about because the guy almost died. Right. So you want it to be something memorable and something that you can look back on and rewatch. And I also kind of hope that it is his retirement match. I do get a little tired of wrestlers retiring and then it's not the end. Like so many football quarterbacks, actors, there's so many people that call it a day and then they're like, but I can't, I'm addicted to this thing. Well, you shouldn't have had the big fancy ceremony then, you know, it's like, come on, man. So yeah. I hope that is it. Is he also didn't wrestle old. I wasn't thinking about him being an old guy in there. He maybe wasn't as quick as he used to be, but I never really questioned that Sting was in that match, competing in that match, and held his own against, you know, the Young Bucks. And to me, it was a very believable thing. I don't want to get to the point where we're watching a match where it's like, ooh, okay, are those knees going to hold him up? You know, the way Taker or some other wrestlers have gotten. I think it's a good way to go, a good way to wrap him up. So.
Me too. And I thought it was really fun with the inclusion of a Ric Flair being there, but also Steamboat. Like there was enough pomp and circumstance, him coming out to Metallica, like just everything really worked. I don't disagree about the glass spots, maybe unnecessary. But if that is his final match, that is a great way to go. Don't be a Ric Flair and have seven.
Exactly. It led nicely into the next collision, which was, you know, so it felt sort of like a new era because you got, you know, Sting's been there for a while now going on his final runs. And now they're announcing, you know, there's going to be the tag tournament. That's exciting. I enjoy that. But of course, there's the new toy for them to play with, right? Okada is here. Mm-hmm. Okada is here. It's very exciting. Now, I'm very excited, but I also have a beef. I've got a beef. Because why do I hate Okada? Can you explain? Can you break it down for me? Why should I hate Okada? Why should I be booing Okada? You've been waiting for this guy. The fans are rabid for this guy. Nobody's booing him. They're all cheering everything he does, but you're trying to force him as a heel. Like it makes he was fighting Eddie Kingston, who's a babyface, one of the biggest babyfaces, and they cheered the Rainmaker. They cheered him pinning Eddie Kingston. I'm like, what is going on? You're trying to make him the bad guy.
If you want him to be a heel, bring him in as a baby face at first and have it like he's fooled you and have like at least a heel turn move.
Something to explain why we're supposed to hate him, because there's zero reason to hate him. And guess what? No one is. It's not working. No one's booing. And like, and he's with the Bucks that get tons of heat, right? People love to boo the Young Bucks. So I don't know. I just think bringing him in as the shiny new toy as a heel makes no sense to me.
Yeah, he's on. And I am curious to see what goes on there. And I am looking forward to seeing him more in aid. I haven't seen Collision this last week, so I am looking forward to getting caught up on it. So
Nigel had another classic line about our friend Brian Danielson. I believe he said he's got a face like a slapped ass, I believe is what he said. I don't even know what that fucking means. So I laughed because I'm like, that's so funny. What are you talking about? That's what is going on. So you haven't seen Collision. I'm going to spoil Collision for you because, you know, we're talking about wrestling. So Osprey comes out and cuts the first promo I've ever heard him do. I've never really heard him like do a promo before. So greatest wrestler on the planet. Turns out he's fucking awesome on the mic. Like really good.
Oh, good.
Because it's different. He's got this crazy accent. I'm not sure where he's from. If he's Welsh, I'm not sure exactly what accent it is from the UK, but it's kind of a nutty accent and it's deep, like kind of Wade Barrett sort of deep.
Oh, really?
And he uses tons of slang and just, it's really an interesting sort of take on a promo. It doesn't sound like, it just sounds like some crazy Brit just ranting about stuff, but it really worked for me. So, because you look at WWE, like I always talk about Ricochet being this incredible weapon. He's this incredible talent, physical, can do everything. Put him a microphone in front of him and he becomes the Dynamite Kid. Like, there's nothing there, like great talent in the ring and no personality on the mic, unfortunately. But we don't have to worry about Ospreay. He doesn't have that problem. So, and they've set up Bryan Danielson kind of as the first little feud that will happen between. And, you know, that's not exactly, you know, Booker of the Year. Doesn't take a genius to go, I wonder if Daniel Bryan and Ospreay will be a good matchup. Like obviously that's just easy. That's easy money right there. So that should be fun. They're talking about maybe that would even lead to All in the summer, and that could be your like co-main event of that big pay-per-view would be those two guys. Well, if they're
and I mean that just naturally works, of course, with Ospreay being from the UK. So why would he not be a co-main eventer? So
yeah, exactly.
I'm curious to see what they do with Roderick Strong now that he's the champ, now that he took the belt from Orange Cassidy.
Yeah, it's like I like him as a wrestler. I enjoyed him in NXT, but I'm not loving it in AEW yet. We'll see what happens. The because even Kyle O'Reilly coming back seemed a little underwhelming. The crowd was like, yay, but it wasn't like Sasha Banks showing up, right? It was like, you know, Kyle O'Reilly's fine, he's decent, but
Even know who he is. So when that was like, it's Kyle O'Reilly, I'm like, okay.
Yeah,
hi Kyle,
it's that
hi,
guy
Kyle,
welcome.
Hi Kyle.
Yeah. So we'll see. I don't know exactly where they're gonna go with it. I don't know if that faction itself is over enough to justify the attention, but we'll see what they do with it. They're all talented guys. They'll figure it out. So it leads us to back onto the road to WrestleMania, and we're doing our match deep dives. So this was fun because these matches I haven't seen in a while. And I realize now that we weren't going in order. I had planned chronological order for these six matches and we've already fucked it up now. So, but that doesn't matter because what we could have done it backwards. It doesn't matter. We're just revisiting the matches. So we started with WrestleMania 13, your favorite wrestler of all time, Bret the Hitman Hart.
And yeah, boy.
Everyone's favorite rattlesnake, Stone Cold Steve Austin. And that was an interesting time, WrestleMania 13. That was a neat time for both of those characters because heels and baby faces, they were kind of teetering at that moment. So I heard on a podcast years ago, I actually listened to them talk on a podcast. It was Edge and Christian's podcast. They interviewed Bret and Stone Cold about this match. And they didn't have anything for them for Mania. And so but they're two of the biggest names. They're like, we got to get you guys a match. So we'll throw you in Mania and we'll make it a submission match. And Stone Cold was like, I don't do submission holds. So how is that going to work? And so they like basically just were like kind of out of spite. They had spoken about it, Bret and Stone Cold. They're like, you know what? Let's steal the show from everybody. Like from the main event, let's be the Macho Man Ricky Steamboat. Let's just go out there and steal WrestleMania because they don't have anything for us. We'll show them. And whew. So
yep.
That match is, if you're looking to watch a wrestling match, it looks like a fight. It's Bret Hart versus Stone Cold at WrestleMania 13. That's just
Holy hell,
a fight. Two angry people fighting. And I would believe if they said every punch was real, every kick was real, every choke was real. I'm like, I can believe it. I didn't see any dodges, any misses at any moments. It was holy.
It starts hot and they go through the crowd, which was really interesting.
Like right away.
Like, yeah. I was like, holy shit. And I was thinking, good on Ken Shamrock for keeping people as away from them as he possibly could when you're legitimately in the middle of the crowd too.
Yeah. So back up just for a second. I had forgotten how cheesy the vignettes were back in the early WrestleManias. That WrestleMania 13 vignette, my wife walks in and she's like, wow, this is different. I'm like, yeah, it's cheesy. It's like, and then Bret Hart challenging Stone, like, it was like, wow, this is horrible. like nowadays it gets you so psyched up for the match. And then it was like, wow, this is corny. So anyway, that cracked me up.
It's like your dad telling you what happened while it's leading to WrestleMania.
Exactly.
Well, you'll see, Collier, then he did
back in the old days.
Yeah. It's funny you mentioned that because I've got the DVD of it, so I popped it in and I went to that chapter and it started and I was thinking, it's been a while since I've seen this. Has this always been this way, or did they throw this in? It's bad.
It's bad. It's real bad. Real bad. So I forgot about Ken Shamrock being the referee. And that's actually a good thing because he does such a quiet, good job that I'll probably forget again in 10 years and go back and be like, oh shit, that was Ken Shamrock. Like he doesn't take control of anything. He doesn't stand out as, because quite often when they have a guest referee, that's for a reason. It's because they're going to do a thing. They're going to get involved. No, he just was the referee. He did a really good job, actually. I was impressed with Shamrock. So
the only time he really had to step in as quote unquote Ken Shamrock was after the match finished. And
oh, yeah.
He was kind of protecting Stone Cold a little bit.
Yeah. Yeah,
that
true.
Was the only time he really had to be Ken Shamrock, aside from crowd control, I guess. But
this is just funny. The entrances, like where they came out of Gorilla and they came through to start down the entrance ramp with the weird lighting, the whole thing was, it was shaped like a vagina. I don't know if you noticed that. I'm so glad my wife was in the
It
room to
sure
point it
was.
out. She was like, wow, vagina entrances. I'm like, oh, geez, you're so right. Wow, they would never do that. That looks interesting. Anyway, I had to mention that. The other thing she pointed out to me was all the people in the crowd with their old school cameras taking pictures of the match and then going, chick, 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 wine, 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 chick, taking a picture. Chick, chick, chick. I'm like, wow, that fucking dates this so badly. Like,
Oh,
now
wow.
we're all taking like 1,000 digital photos per event. And back then you took like 14 shots and you're like, I hope one of those turned out. I'm gonna pay somebody $40. I hope one of those pictures turned out. Like, what a weird time.
And I did like the way, like, through the vagina hallway. I did like how Stone Cold came out and literally went through a broken pane of glass to
Oh
come
yeah,
out. I thought that
right?
was like a little on the nose, but it totally worked.
Yeah, you wouldn't want that every time, but it was really effective for that match to have that glass, literally the glass explode that we always hear. I thought that was awesome. I thought that was awesome.
Yeah.
But there was a weird moment. One weird thing that happened with Shamrock, it wasn't really his fault, but there was the figure four that happened early in the match, and there was a rope break on it, but it was a no DQ match. So there's no rope break
Well,
on
there
a no
shouldn't have been
DQ
a
match.
rope break.
Yeah, I thought, like, it's such a tight match where everything was so perfect. That one thing, I'm like, I bet you either for Brett or Stone Cold, if they watch that, it's like, oh, fuck. Why is there a rope break? Damn it. I never should have allowed that.
Damn rookie refs.
Damn rookie. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, once that color started, once Stone Cold took the shot outside the ring, because the way he, I heard in the interview that he did cut himself, but they made it look like he didn't, because the way he flew into the guardrail, he flew face first in. I totally believed when he came back out that he was cut from his face smashed into the guardrail. It looked seamless the way they did that. I never would have imagined that he initiated that cut on his face, but boy, did he bleed. Like, it gets a little hard to watch. And I can, like, it doesn't bother me and I can sit through it. But after 10 minutes, I'm like, holy hell, this is like, my wife was cooking in the kitchen. I'm like, don't come in right now. Just stay in the kitchen. Just don't come in right now. Cause it's like, she doesn't love the blood. It's not the worst, but she doesn't love it. And that's like one of the most excessive amounts. Like, the mat is just purple by the time it's over. It's like, Jesus. Oh, it's pretty epic. Like, when he's in the sharpshooter
And
screaming
it's
at the camera, and it's
pouring
just
down his
pouring down
face.
his face, man.
Yeah.
It's
Giving us that iconic image. And let me get this straight. You're a man of today and you told your wife to get back in the kitchen.
Yes, sirree, Bob. the low blow. There was the low blow, and then JR. JR from the 80s and the 90s was just gold. Oh, that one's down near Saskatoon. Oh, fuck. Just, I was like, thank you, JR. Thank you so much.
Yeah.
You know
what?
that was.
I noticed the commentary was so on point because sometimes Jerry Lawler can really grate my nerves,
Yeah.
but he was on point for this match too. Like, where he was like, oh, look, Stu, he's awake for this one. And
Yeah.
he had a couple great one-liners that I thought, okay, King, you were on point. You're catching fire this time.
I did find, we'll talk about Vince McMahon as the announcer character from WrestleMania 13, and it won't be related at all to what we're talking about in the modern day with Vince McMahon. It's just so we don't get ourselves canceled. We're not supporting Vince McMahon, but
no,
he, as an announcer, he's one of those iconic voices for me from my childhood. And he sounded the whole time like he was offended by the blood. So I think they were really trying to sell that he was the face announcer, baby face, and he was bothered by the violence. And Jerry the King was the heel announcer, totally fine with all of it. Because it was really an interesting play they did between the two of them. Because I noticed Vince kept getting more and more upset with how gory it was. And I was like, is he really? I couldn't tell if he was really upset. Because I, from what Stone Cold said on the podcast, they weren't supposed to, that gore was not supposed to happen. There was supposed to be maybe a slight cut. They definitely were not supposed to bleed all over the apron the way they did. So,
well, and Vince made a comment at the end that I thought, well, this doesn't age well, where he's like, we're sorry for those who had to watch this. This is not the kind of match we like to put out there, however he phrased it. I'm like, well, this is one of your classics. Sorry, Vince, but you're right. He was knowing that, they don't usually do color. And he even said, this is not something you usually see on WWE.
It was awesome match. And the coolest thing about it is at the very end, Brett came in as the babyface and Stone Cold came in as the heel. And as Brett is leaving, he's getting booed, right? And Stone Cold's getting cheered. And you got to hear it flip. It was kind of like Rocky and The Rock and Hogan when we talked about that match. Like, the crowd flipped it for them. And I think WWE was going that way anyway, but it actually worked organically in the match that now Bret Hart leaving the ring, he's walking down the aisle, and now he's yelling at kids, right? He's yelling at kids. They're yelling at him. And Stone Cold's getting cheers because he's suffering in the ring. It was the sympathetic. You know, they felt bad for Stone Cold and they hated Bret Hart. I'm like, wow, that happened so naturally. The heel turn that's a beautiful thing. I love seeing that happen in a match. So that match, that's a classic, all-time classic.
Well, the storytelling was on point from the use of the blood, because sometimes, like, we always talk about AEW, how there's just too much, right? Like, at some point it means nothing, but it meant everything in this match, right? Like, you get that iconic picture of Stone Cold with the blood running down his face, but it also leads to the finish where he passes out because he's lost so much blood and been through the ringer. And like, it was used as part of the story and it was just perfect, like chef's kiss. And it was these two, maybe not at the height of their powers, but they gave you everything you'd want in a Bret Hart Stone Cold match.
Yeah. Fantastic. No, so yeah, great match. And that led us to a match I hadn't seen in a while. And I had forgotten so much about the lead up to Heartbreak Kid, Shawn Michaels, Undertaker, WrestleMania 25. When I proposed it as a match we would watch, I couldn't remember the setup, like why they were wrestling. And to watch the vignette of Shawn Michaels in his white Undertaker outfit being like the celestial sort of anti-Undertaker, I'm like, fuck, I forgot all about that. I forgot all that even happened. And, you know, Taker with his streak 16-0 at WrestleMania versus Mr. WrestleMania, Shawn Michaels. I'm like, oh, yeah. Like, it was kind of that, like, we need a match at Mania that's not the main event. It's not. They would have feuds for titles and stuff. You got to have an iconic match at Mania, something that's got two icons in an important fight. Almost every Mania has one of those. And that was a perfect setup for a match. I thought it was excellent. The entrances with Shawn Michaels coming down from heaven in his white clothes and then Undertaker coming up from hell through the stage. I'm like, and then I said it first. And then Jared goes, Shawn Michaels down from heaven and Undertaker up from hell. And I was like, yes, that's exactly like it. That worked perfectly. That was the perfect intro, right? The crowd is cheering for everybody. We're like, well, that's going to be interesting. What's going to happen? Well, what's going to happen is you're going to see a banger of a match. That's what's going to happen.
This is the first time I've seen this too. We are entering the territory of these next matches we're going to talk about. I have not seen. So these are fresh eyes.
So what's your first impression of that match? If you just, your initial thoughts.
Wow. To use a JR-ism, what a slobber knocker. Holy hell. Like, just an endurance match. There's some spots that you can't believe that these guys get up from. And I've said it on the podcast, but I'll reiterate, like, I used to hate Shawn Michaels because of the Montreal Screwjob, but I've relented, and I'm glad I can watch a match like this with an open mind because it's not tainted. I can appreciate him. And because I watched this on YouTube, I didn't get the entrances, but just Shawn Michaels ring gear, you kind of got, because he had angelic wings and a cross on his on his stirrups. And I'm like, okay, this is very much, that opposition of light versus dark. But again, like what we're saying with Stone Cold and Bret, if you've got two quintessential performers that are giving you everything you want and things you didn't even know you want. Like that Undertaker dive out of the
ring.
How does he not kill himself? Like he had to beamed himself, and they even say, like, there's a dent in the mat. I'm like,
so
what the fuck?
30 seconds before that, Shawn Michaels does a moonsault off the top, and Undertaker dodges it, so Shawn Michaels just lands full on his hip on the concrete from the top rope. Like, you could hear the smack, and I was like, oh my god, that was his hip hitting the ground. And then 30 seconds later, Undertaker is jumping over the top and landing on his head. I'm like, oh my god, they're both gonna die in this match right now. I found the replay of the Undertaker one horrifying, because from behind he just disappears behind the ring. He goes over the top and you see him, his legs are just like, oh yeah, he's dead. That's it. You can hear the King from the Hell in the Cell. That's it. He's dead. Like, I was like, oh my god, guys, brutal. Just to go back for a second, when the entrances happened and the Undertaker chimes hit, I literally got full body chills.
Nice.
First bong hit out of my stereo, and the chills went from my toes to the back of my neck. I'm like, that will always get me. That will always get me. That sound just gives me chills in all the right ways. I get so, you and I got to see it live one time, and it will stay with me forever. The excitement that sound happens. Like, there's lots of great themes out there, but there's nothing like the Undertaker. When that sound hits,
it creates a moment. That's why, like, it's an experience. It's not about the music. It's like, it penetrates your soul. But and even the presentation of everything, like especially watching WrestleMania 13 to this, there's a jump in presentation where it's gone from like a darkly lit arena to this is full on WrestleMania spectacle where the crowd's really well lit. So you can see the volume of people watching this, the flash bulbs, the lights, just the haze in the arena to add that extra ambiance, like on point presentation. Phenomenal.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Something that really impressed me in the ring was Shawn Michaels was just selling like a motherfucker. He was, every time he got thrown into the corner, he would flip over like Ric Flair. He would bounce. Like if he took a clothesline or an elbow, he would bounce off the ring and leap sort of like off and into the ropes. Like he was doing everything he could to emphasize that when the Undertaker hit him, it was like being hit by a Mack truck. You know, it was definitely the David and Goliath sort of thing they were setting up, right? And I thought that was handled so well, because it started off like big fight feel with Shawn sort of bobbing and weaving, Muhammad Ali trying to avoid the big guy. And I thought that was like the first minute or two of the match was so slow and deliberate, and it really had me feeling like it felt like the main event of WrestleMania. Really, it did. I'm amazed there wasn't a world title on the line. It's just, that's back-to-back matches we're talking about where it steals the show. And I don't even remember what the main event is of that WrestleMania at all. So it's typically I find out and go, oh, really? Like, it's usually a letdown compared to how good that mid-card match is.
And I will say that Shawn Michaels, I had forgot how great he was at acting out emotion, because there are a couple times in this match where, you know, his in-ring ability, but his actual characterization and emotion. There was a moment where Undertaker was potentially counted out, and they showed Shawn Michaels cowering in the corner, and he looked scared shitless, like he was just hoping and praying that he would just get counted out and the match would be over. And it looked like anxiety and fear. I'm like, damn, you don't get that with a lot of wrestlers where you get the skill, but you get that emotional acting too.
I totally thought the same thing. The amount of finish moves. Normally I don't enjoy finishers that don't finish, like a kick out of a finisher. But if you save it for the right type of match, like this match, Yes. Especially the way they did it. It became like an on display sort of like greatest hits of finish moves, because each one of them has these amazing moves they do, and it wasn't enough to finish the person off. Because I kept writing, I'm like, kick out from the choke slam, kick out from the sweet chin music, kick out from the last ride, kick out from the tombstone. Like, I'm like, just constant kickouts from these finish moves. In this match, it kept creating this like, are you kidding me feel. It just kept the crowd just hands up in the air, like, what's it gonna take for one of these guys to lie there for 3 seconds and let this match finally end? Like, it really didn't feel like anyone was ever gonna win, or they somehow would both win, right? It was just, and eventually having the Undertaker catch Shawn Michaels off the rope, yes, like that, like when he catches him, you kind of, that's like, oh, it's done. You know, that's like, that was the impossible. Every match has an impossible move. But yeah, it comes at the 20th minute or 25th minute of a brutal match where he lands on his head and he catches Shawn Michaels at the end. Like, well done. They must have rehearsed the hell out of that move.
Well, and not an easy catch. It's not like some of these where you see the person jump off the top rope and they're just full on, like, spread out, easy to catch. No, Shawn Michaels was doing a flip and the Undertaker caught him, and then that went into the tombstone. I was like, holy shit. Like, no kidding that finished. Yeah, that was such a great way to finish it off.
Fantastic match. I loved it. Undertaker winning to continue the streak was great. At that point, it just seemed like he was never going to lose at Mania. And yeah, that match, unbelievable. Yep. So yeah, I'm glad that one stood the test of time for us. Amazing match.
We're 4 for 4.
4 for 4. And we got 2 matches left. Our next podcast, we'll talk about the Tables, Ladders, and Chairs 2 from WrestleMania 17. And then the WrestleMania, I believe it's 35 main event or 36, one of the two. I think it's 35 with Ronda Rousey, Becky Lynch, and Charlotte Flair, the first ever women's main event of a WrestleMania. So, yeah, we have those 2 matches to look forward to. And then we're going to have Mania. And you're watching Mania this year. So,
yeah.
The card's starting to load up. Night one ends now with the big tag. We're going to have Seth and Cody versus Rock and Roman in the big tag match. And there's a stipulation on there. So if Cody and Seth defeat the Bloodline, then the Bloodline is banned from ringside for Cody versus Roman on night two.
Oh,
but
wow.
If Roman and Rock win, it's Bloodline rules for night two, meaning anything goes. Everyone from the Bloodline is allowed to interfere, weapons galore, and basically no chance in hell that Cody wins the title. So yeah, that's a setup right there for 2 nights of excitement. I'm stoked just by both those main events. So
that's awesome. I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah. There's a bunch of other matches that are being set up, but there's lots of time to talk about those. So I'm interested about Gunther defending the Intercontinental title against Sami Zayn. That's going to be a real beauty because Gunther's now the longest reigning Intercontinental champ of all time. So he seems unstoppable, same as Roman. But I have a feeling this Mania, we're going to see a little bit of changing of the guard in some of the divisions. I think we're going to see some new champs to start a new run. But who knows? They might just surprise us and Mania ends and it's status quo and we're all like, oh, fuck. Yeah, it's good stuff. Unless you got anything else, we can do our pushes and tap outs.
Nope, I'm ready to tap out. Who's yours?
Tapping out this week. It's kind of boring because we already talked about it, but glass and fire being gimmicks in matches, I've just had enough of it. I heard a great thing on Busted Open. Bully Ray's having a good week of quotes for me. He said that, you know, you take those spots out and you put a table there, it's the same thing. It doesn't change the moment at all, but it's a hell of a lot safer for the guy that's doing it. And it's all about safety for these wrestlers. It's, you don't have to shock the world. You don't have to be a daredevil. You don't have to take super amounts of risks. You don't have to. You're already taking enough risks. You're already risking all of your health all the time, but you don't have to go that far. The glass spot, it's just, it maybe accomplished what you wanted it to, but if you take that glass out of there and put a table there, it's the same moment. The crowd will react the exact same way. People will remember it, but they won't have this connotation. This negativity won't be there. So it's, to me, it's just, I think we've moved beyond the need, because there's a fire spot on Collision this week. And it's just, it's not necessary. You don't, I, I legit think the guy got a little burned on the spot. And I'm like, I don't want to see that. It's just, it's not necessary. So they're already killing themselves when they go flying off the top. Well, watching Shawn Michaels hit that floor, I'm like, oh man, that could literally, you could be paralyzed after that move. So isn't that a big enough risk? We don't need the chance of the glass exploding and going into the crowd and getting in somebody's eye. Like it's all just to me seems unnecessary. So I'm tapping out on all those unnecessary, dangerous weapon spots they love to do in AEW. So, and then my other tap out, I kind of touched on it with the finishers getting kicked out of. It works in certain situations, and if you save it for the right match, it's really exciting to have someone kick out of the unstoppable finish move. But I believe a finish move should have magic powers, and it should be, you got to sneak out of it or counter it or put your foot on the ropes or someone interferes to get out of it. Because if you get hit by someone's finisher, that should finish you every single time.
It's called a finisher for a reason.
Yeah. So, and it happens way too much in all promotions, TNA, AEW, WWE. There's just so many, it takes four finishers to finish people off, and it makes them signature moves, in my opinion. So I kind of missed the day when a finisher ended the match. So that's my other tap out. So what do you got?
Me too. For me, mine's simple, and I touched on it before. I'm just kind of sick of just meatheads assaulting referees, like just going off and not even like a bump or trying to like a fuckery finish, but they outright assault a ref for no reason. We've seen it in TNA. We've seen it in AEW. So it's not even just one specific promotion. I'm done with it where it's like, come on, like what purpose does that serve for a story? Other than to me, it's kind of cheap heat. Like, oh, this guy's a bad guy because he's abusing the ref. It's like, okay, good on you. I don't know. It just rubs me the wrong way. So that's my only real tap out. Who's your big push?
I got two pushes I'm giving. One is just to John Cena for being an amazing human being. I think he's a joy to watch in wrestling. I think he's a joy to watch in Hollywood. And I just love reading about all the nice things he does in real life. So John Cena, you're a wonderful man. I love you.
Nice.
And there we go. And my other push is for Oba Femi. He is the NXT North American champion. He is this giant of a human. And he actually doesn't really fit the bill for what you usually see come out of NXT. NXT is a lot of these young, strong, fast guys. He's this giant monster. He's also very athletic. He's exciting on the mic. And I think you're going to hear big things from Oba Femi coming up soon.
Nice.
So, yeah.
Nice.
What do you got for a push?
Well, that leads really well into my first push. Powerhouse Hobbs from AEW. Just a big monster of a man. Yeah. He's got a lot of charisma. I just, every time he comes out, I'm like, yeah, like I am a huge mark for him. So I'm really, really liking him. And then my only other one is the bounty hunter, Brian Keith. He recently became AEW Elite. He had a couple tryout matches, but he just brings a fun style. He can move. He's really good in the ring. He's just an interesting character that I've got my eye on. So yeah.
Awesome.
Bounty hunter, Brian Keith.
Love it. Sounds great. And I cannot wait for Mania, dude. This is going to be fun.
Yeah, it is.
Okay, well, it's time to wrap things up. Huge thanks to all the listeners that joined us this week. Don't forget to subscribe and download the episode in your podcast app of choice. Every little bit helps us. Spotify users, you can now interact directly with the podcast in-app as we add Q&As and polls for every episode, so check those out. And we even try and read out your responses, so let us have them. And you can now reach the podcast on Instagram at Murder Gymnastics Pod. I try and post daily, so pop on over for fun memes, pics, and videos. And of course, Paul, if people got nothing going on, what should they do?
Go watch some wrestling. Yeah!